All right, welcome. Welcome back. It's been about 6 months to Bread for Life podcast, and this is your host, Daniel Velasquez. Glad to reconnect here. And today, I have a guest who is a friend of mine. His name is Breno. Breno, how do you pronounce your last name? I don't want to butcher it.
Breno Pisana.
Sana. Awesome. You're from Brazil, right?
Yes.
Awesome. So the reason we wanted to connect it is so Brent actually was like, hey, why don't we do a podcast? And I told him like, hey, I have one, so I haven't done much in a while because I don't want to just talk to talk unless we're adding value. But I do think that we'll be able to add a lot of value with Breno today in this session because he is been a professional in the health space for some time. How long have you been doing this right now?
It's been about 9 years, coming up on 9 years.
Okay.
Been a
Wow. So
personal trainer.
as a personal trainer, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And I know you've found some success in that space where you're working for gyms and now you have your own practice. So congratulations on that and on the hard work and being able to have your own business today.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. It's quite the ride, that's for sure. Sometimes I think we get this image of, oh yeah, he knows what he's doing, everything's going well. But it's definitely a lot of uncertainty. So when I started training a few years or 9 years ago, I was working out of a small gym. It was Anytime Fitness, and previously had no training experience. And I met with the manager and I got certified, and he said, now I'm going to teach you the sales process. And I worked there for about 2 years. And as time went by, I kind of realized that I kind of hit my ceiling. I wanted to expand a little bit more, obviously make more money. And then I started working at another facility that was rent-based. So for a lot of personal trainers, it's just the audience here, the way that most trainers get paid is they'll start working, they'll get certified, they'll work at a facility, and the facility will take, 70% of the total payment of that session. And
Wow.
then as you get better, as you get more certifications under your belt, then you start, you can kind of work your way up. Then you get paid 40%, then you get paid 50. And every gym has its own way of doing it in terms of how much. Some start out at 50, and it really just depends. But for this reason, we don't see too many trainers make it past their first year because there is the business end of things. There is the business side of learning how to sell, marketing, building relationships. And the benefit of working at a big box gym is it's so big, people just come to you. There isn't a need most of the time for you to go out and get your own clients and things like that. So when I decided to move into a rent-based gym, which was a fixed monthly fee, I found myself a little bit overwhelmed, to be honest with you, with the task of, okay, now it's all on me. God is good. At the time while I was there, I didn't necessarily have to generate a lot of my own leads, but I was able to build my business in a few years. I mean, I was training 25, 30 people, consistently, and never really dropped below 20 something people at one time. And at that time, I learned a lot. It was an experience. You kind of learn as you go. I think one of my biggest complaints about the fitness industry is that they're really big on certifications, but there's really no education after that. It's really up to the trainer themselves to dig deeper, to learn how to coach, right? Because there's a difference between coaching and training. And then I worked at that facility for about, I want to say, about 5 years or so. And then we live in Fort Myers, so the hurricane hit. And then once the hurricane hit, that gym that I was working at closed down. And now I'm like, where do I go? What do I do? Luckily, I had already had about 30 to 40% of my clients doing online training. And I transferred everybody to online. As soon as the internet came back on, we were training online. And then now I work at a small private facility, and it's called the 121 Gym, and it's in Cape Coral, over near Dixie Roadhouse, Iguanamiya. If you're from the area, you're probably familiar with that name. But yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it shows that it's a journey, and it's not an easy one anytime you're looking to create something for yourself. And I like that you talked about COVID and how it kind of threw you off, right? If we hadn't had COVID, chances are is you probably would have just stayed doing what you were doing. And which at first seemed like something negative, push your limits to change into now doing things online and being able to be independent. And obviously, I'm sure it was painful at some points and stressful. Even, till this day, I'm sure there's some things you're still working on, but
Yeah, it's
I
always
mean,
a work in progress.
yeah. How do you feel now? Like, in terms of, would you go back to doing what you were doing before, or
So
what's your goal
just
now?
yeah, so just so the listener can kind of get a picture, I'm still doing personal training. So I train people online through video, where maybe it's someone that remotely, like I wouldn't normally have access to someone, for example, in Connecticut. I have a client who's up in Connecticut, and I've been with her for about 3.5 years. I have people who I have a client who I've had for 4 years now, and she's in New Zealand, and I see her 3 times a week. So it just adds a lot of
That's cool.
flexibility. Yeah, it adds a lot of flexibility to the job, and it provides a service that is very convenient. Let's say you are that busy business person, or you do have a family and you don't have much time to go to the gym. So instead of having to drive 45 minutes, because a gym can be about 20 minutes away, it can be a little closer, give or take, but there's the process of getting out of the car, getting into the gym, and you can save yourself about an hour a day. So from that perspective, it makes training convenient. And I think in today's fast-paced world of I want it and I want it now, just getting up, turning on the camera, yeah, I have an appointment with my trainer, and then boom, you're done.
And I think that's the key part, right? Is the fact that that person still has an appointment that they're paying for. So there's still that level of accountability that you're providing, so that they can actually, so they actually do it and commit to it, and chances of getting results. I don't know what the percentage increase is with a coach, but I know for a fact it's at least, 50%, if not twice as likely.
It's a lot higher. I don't have that statistic offhand, but
Yeah.
it definitely is a lot higher. I mean, when we really think about the things that we have done in our lives that are difficult, most of the time we have some form of accountability. And accountability doesn't always necessarily look like one individual. Like I'll, you know, an example would be an example of accountability could be a gym owner who or even just a business owner who rents out an office space, right? There's a form of accountability there, because now you're saying, okay, now my rent has increased $1,500 or $2,000 a month.
Or even just having to pay rent, right? Like, you have to
Just
get.
exact like investing, right? There's like this idea of I'm now putting my own money into it. Which I think we could do better as far as thinking about it from a time perspective as well. I think a lot of us spend so much time doing things, and we don't realize that I think if we were to trade the word time for investment, I think we would have a different mindset. We'd have a different outlook on things. So even
Right.
though that person is training online, there's an accountability. There's something there holding them to doing that, that particular thing, whether it's weight loss, whether it's building muscle, whether it's getting out of pain. And so what the online service has done for me, it's just added a lot of flexibility, and I think going into it, most people are like, nah, I don't really want to do online. Nah, it's like, just the idea of working out at home. It's just, I don't really feel like it. I don't really want to, which I get it, if you don't want that. But I think that there's a huge population that feels very uncomfortable with going to the gym. There's a huge population of people that don't want people around them when they're working out. They prefer that private setting, where they're comfortable. And considering how gyms are packed, because it's intimidating, for someone who's never joined a facility or joined a gym, they got membership fees. They got, sometimes depending on the gym, there's a contract. And then there's, you got the big muscle head. which, by the way, if you guys ever see a muscle head, he's probably going to be the person that wants to help you the most. It can be easy to look at them and be like, oh, he's a certain way, or you won't necessarily want to be there and to help me, and he's going to judge me. The people who are really fit are not there to judge you. They started somewhere too. So,
Don't judge a book by its cover, right?
exactly. So from that aspect, online personal training is a great option. If that sounds like you, if you're listening to this podcast and you're maybe on the fence about doing online because you don't think you're going to get the results, just dive in. Just dive in, man. Go all in, because at the end of the day, it's the accountability that's going to help you. There
Right.
is no best or unicorn program, which is what a lot of people are looking for. A lot of people are looking for the best scientifically backed program, for this needs to be exactly tailored and perfect for me, which of course there's customization. But any trainer who's been in an industry long enough, it's the program doesn't matter nearly as much as understanding the patterns and behaviors that are associated with why it's difficult for you to lose weight. Most people who have tried to lose weight are not, it's not their first time. Right? So
Right.
it's a little bit deeper than that.
I
So
know
this is
that
where, yeah.
the reason why most people fail is because we are not emotionally stable enough, I think, oftentimes, we are too driven by our emotions, and we think as humans that we are thinking beings that have feelings, when we really are more like emotional beings that think. And when you think about purchase decisions or just in general, like most things are driven by feelings, right? And when people don't have the commitment to say, hey, I'm going to stick to this, that's when they can't, they fail. And we've talked about habits, right? And asking about your why, and asking questions about in this podcast before, like why does this matter to you? And you were sharing with me that, the when you mentioned about the difference between training and coaching, coaching is more helping that person with not only the schedule and these are the exercises, but precisely that motivation and getting them that confidence, getting them that those creating that environment to actually help them succeed. So, I think the biggest takeaway that we have from what you just discussed is that you need some form of accountability, and it's good to try different things out. But most importantly, it's just one, go for it. But second is get some form of accountability. And it could be as simple as paying a membership or paying somebody, because then it will cost you something, right? And I know Grant Cardone talks about that, where he says if you're not putting money into it, you're not really making a commitment. But yeah, why don't you share a little bit more about like that aspect of it in terms of like the emotional side and what you've noticed in terms of what it takes to actually get somebody results, that how it goes beyond just creating the diet and all that, the schedule for them.
I definitely will, and I love that we brought up, the money situation. Because a lot of what objections come up, right? There's two biggest objections. It's I don't have the time, and then oh, this is too expensive. Those are going to be most of the time when I am speaking with somebody in a consultation or during an assessment. Those are going to be their biggest roadblocks, to making the decision. And I think it unfortunately tells us a lot about where we are as a society, where we value, the big question is, what do you value?
What are your
And
priorities as well?
what,
Exactly.
yeah, and, many of us wouldn't think twice about spending an extra $200 on a car payment to upgrade our car. But when it comes to investing in our bodies, when it comes to maybe paying a little bit more for organic, and of course, I want to be very fair and very understanding that not everybody can, that it's not, it's considered a luxury, like training is considered a luxury. But from a 10,000 foot view, of a, this bigger picture perspective, the question that comes to my mind is it really a luxury? Because maybe, 30, 40 years ago, it was. It's like this idea of me going to a facility, going into this box where there's heavy things that I'm going to pick up and put down. Why would I do that? What is the purpose? The person wasn't overweight. They didn't struggle with, diabetes. They didn't struggle with high cholesterol. They didn't have, 30, 40 extra pounds of fat. They felt comfortable in the body that they looked in. But what unfortunately over the last few years is coming up is okay, now 7 out of 10 people are overweight. They struggle with weight. So I think from a big picture perspective, we need to start being first aware of the fact that this may not be a luxury for me. That maybe
Right.
if I pinch some pennies here, if I'm a little bit more intelligent about not spending, so much money on the shoes that I buy, or upgrading my new car, or, I mean, when you really think about it, we spend so much money on things that really don't give us any more value than maybe the hour that we did that thing. We will go out for drinks, and I mean, it's $15 for an alcoholic beverage. And then we'll have, people have two or three of those, and then they've spent like $120 at dinner. Do you need that? Of course. But before we know it, we're doing it two times a week, one time a week. And I think when I'm sitting down with somebody in a consultation, that is one of the biggest things that I try to get the person to see. That, hey, I think you're spending more than you actually think. Or you're eating out more than you actually think. And so creating this awareness makes us really realize where our priorities are, where our values are. And in a fast-paced world where fun becomes the precedent, where I just want to enjoy my time. I want to have a good life. We tend to overlook and really understand how much we're spending on other things. But I understand that it's still going to be a luxury for some people. I understand that there's still going to be, practical challenges between, of getting to the gym, of this is pretty expensive. But
Well,
what
I
was your
don't think
original
at
question?
least there's that excuse anymore, in at least in the US, because if you think about places, even in not thinking about online, if you want to go in person, there's gyms that are $10 a month. Immediately Planet Fitness comes to mind. Amped, right, comes to mind. So $10 a month, that's what you spend, like you said, on, if people that drink on a drink, going out, or you go out for Chipotle, it's already over $10.
So I
So,
spent $20 at Chipotle the other day, man. It was crazy. Just had
right.
guac and some extra meat, and it was $21. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. So
Couldn't
it's
believe
more
it.
about the your priorities, right? And what do you actually value? And I think most people recognize that health is very important, but then they don't follow through on actually doing what needs to be done. Like, we've talked about in the past how it's really the small things like that make a big difference in the long term, like the compound effect. And I like that you brought up that point about awareness and helping people like realize, hey, there's maybe these little things that are adding up over time more than you realize. And that's what's really creating the issues, right? So awareness for anything is number one. To be able to, this is the first step to be able to actually solve the problem or take control. Even talking about, again, emotional intelligence, if you're not even aware of your feelings and what's creating certain reactions or what's keeping you stuck, then you can't even solve it, right? So the first thing in emotional intelligence is self-awareness, right? And taking note of things. And I'm doing a program with Darren Hardy about leadership, and that's something that he puts a lot of emphasis on, because leadership ultimately is a lot about managing emotions and managing the emotional state of your team. If you get your team feeling great about what you're doing and the mission and how they are contributing, and they feel like you actually care about them, you have empathy, which the best way to do that is to actually do care about them, then they'll be more engaged, they'll get better results. So when you have a client, right, and most, I would say, what, 70% of people put in their lists for the year, they're hey, this is my goals for the year, that they want to lose weight or they want to get in better shape, but then within 3 months, at least 50% of them are no longer on track, right? So what do
Oh
you
man,
think
it's way
are the
higher
things
than
that,
that. Yeah, it's way higher than that.
right.
I've seen some statistics go as far as like 93%, I think, of New Year resolutioners give up within like the first month. And I do believe it's that high.
There you go. New Year's resolution. That's what I was looking for. But what do you do then with your clients in order to actually get them results? So you talked about awareness, right? Is kind of realizing, hey, like, this is not that, you're already investing so much into other things, and kind of getting them to realize like health, right, is important. And I mean, do you ask them about like why they care about those goals?
So, first I want to say it depends on the client. Everybody is going to have different goals. Everybody's going to have a
Right.
different reason why they started. To some people, it may be, I just want to look good without my shirt off. I just want the biceps. I just want a six pack. There's going to be some people who don't want to look at themselves in the mirror. It was just like, oh man, and what happened? And that's really going to play a hit on their self-confidence. So one of the first things that I do in an assessment with somebody is called a be do have. So basically we reverse engineer the problem. So in the have column, that would be like your goal. And let's just say the person's, has a weight loss goal of like 20 pounds. There's obviously an emotional connection to that 20 pounds. There's a reason why they want to lose it. So the more
Right.
specific you can get about why it's important, the more specific the person can understand, hey, okay, you want to lose 20 pounds, and what else? Asking
Like,
yourself, why
why
is it
does that matter?
important? Why does that even matter? Because I
Right.
think we in this in our
Second level
society we tend
questions to dig deeper.
we tend to look at weight as the goal. But really, it's not the goal. The weight is just a symptom of something else that's deeper, that's more deeply hidden. And I think, we're both Christian men. I think from a spiritual level, we both agree that it's because human beings have a tendency to want the things we don't necessarily need. We have a need to, we have a desire to sometimes for things that we know aren't good for us, but we still chase it anyway. But I think being very clear about why is it that I want to lose this 20 pounds? What will it give me? How will I feel? Right. And then there's also addressing like, what is the trigger that causes me to eat more? Or what is the trigger that makes me anxiously eat? Because I think a lot of times people do things and they don't even realize it. And the reason, and I have to take, again, I have to take a step back here because it's going to depend on each individual. But one of the things I want the audience to really understand and have this frame of mind when they think about health is that it's not your fault that you are overweight. Because the way that God created things, it's very, very hard to gain weight out of nature. Like we go back to 40, 50 years ago. You can ask your grandparents if you're younger, and your grandparents will attest to this. No one was overweight. There was no issue with this. This was not a problem. For the last 50 years, in all of human evolution, whether you believe it was a million years or 10,000 years or whatever, we have never had to deal with this type of issue before. It's new. It's a new problem. So just going back to, it's not your fault, but it is your responsibility. Right? You don't
Good
have to feel
point.
bad about where you are, but you do have to take responsibility for the things that you're doing that got you there.
It's easy to justify, hey, well, I don't have the time, right? I don't, I'm too busy working. And nowadays it's they make it convenient, right, to like not be healthy, right? If you want to, with you just go to the store, you can buy whatever you want.
Right.
I know one of the biggest escapes for people's food, right? Whenever they want something to pick them up. And I think we all do it to an extent. I know I do it with chocolate, and or just sweet things. But then it's important about, again, thinking about your goals, right? And like, why does this matter to you? And what I've seen is oftentimes it takes somebody realizing that they won't be able to like play with their kids or they're gonna die if they're really out
Right,
of shape,
right.
in the next like 20 years, and they're never going to meet their grandchildren, or they're not going to be able to do those things that they want to do in life, like have an adventure, or like, go, if they go travel somewhere, they won't be able to, like, I don't know, let's say climb the stairs to a cathedral or whatever, right? Or
And trust me, that comes up a lot. That really does. Just to the listeners, like that really does come up a lot. That's one of the reasons a lot of my clients came to me is, man, I went on vacation and I realized I couldn't even enjoy my time. I was breathing heavy the whole time. I was exhausted.
Exactly. And so, it takes that kind of like wake up call for a lot of people. But why do, like, I mean, it's human nature, right? Like, we sometimes put things off until it's sometimes too late or we're too out of shape to start taking action. But I think overall, the here is what we got to realize is it doesn't have to be that hard. I know that for me, how I lost weight from the pandemic, because I think I got to 215 pounds. And I'm pretty average height, so I was chubby. And it was just because I wasn't working out, right? But I primarily was eating. And then how I lost it was just diet, right? Like not going out to eat as much. Just the fact that we're eating at home, and it's not even like I'm not eating things that I like. My wife, we eat pretty well, and I still have had chocolate. I don't think, unless I was maybe doing some kind of like fast or dinner plan, where I haven't had like chocolate, because that's just one of my things. But just being consistent with food and then working out maybe on average 3 times a week, if that realistically. I would say I'm pretty good health right now, and I feel great, so it's more about
Oh,
what I've
congrats,
learned
man.
in my experience. Thank you. It and obviously I would like to put on more muscle and all that, but my goal was to be healthy first and foremost, and to feel good, and that's where I'm at, and I feel great about it. But I think most importantly, it's just realizing, like, hey, it's about consistency, right? Like, just recently I had to go to a work trip, and I couldn't work out much, or I didn't, because it was easy to justify being busy with work and doing other things. But I was glad, because I feel like I didn't lose too much, and once you get back into it, it's easier, and I want to get back into it, right? Because you're building that habit, right? So, we're creatures of habit at the end of the day, right? It's the things you're doing on a daily basis that are going to make a big difference long term. But what would you say to that person that thinks it's like too big of a sacrifice, or that they think that they only have to eat lettuce? I know that we talked about, like, there's not really like a diet plan that really like works for everybody, or magic diet plan. It's more just you need to find what works for you and stick to it, right?
It's really the thing is, we have overcomplicated it. There has been the fitness industry does a great job of convincing people that food is bad. So I'd like to just go over a few red flags, or even just one red flag in terms of what programs should I be adhering to, right? Because if you go on Facebook, if you go on Instagram, if you're somebody who has ever even researched weight loss, you're going to have about 20 different advertisements selling you on weight loss, selling you on this is why you can't lose weight.
Right.
And one of the things that I've learned to look out for is the word good and bad. If someone demonizes food, and demonizing, maybe a strong word here, but if someone says, I don't know, freaking, but potatoes are bad for you. In my eyes, just from a trainer's perspective, I immediately just don't click on the program. I'm not even interested in it, and I move on.
Yeah.
Because what they're doing is they're fear-mongering. There's the fitness industry is great at playing with people's emotions. So then what ends up happening is, let's just say someone who isn't educated on it clicks on that ad, sees the program. It's very well detailed. It's got a funnel. It's very well constructed. You have this beautiful template with beautiful colors, a bunch of testimonials of people saying that they lost weight because they went on this diet. The issue is there's no such thing as good or bad food, right? It's your relationship to the food that makes it good or bad. So this happened, for example, with like keto. Keto was a huge craze, I think maybe 15, 20 years ago. Remove all your carbs. Carbs are bad for you. Don't eat this. Don't eat that. And then you had a bunch of people that lost weight. And so now you have this army of people saying that carbs are bad for you. I have not met a single person who hasn't gone back to eating carbs. So is it really the carbs that are bad for you, or is it because you lowered your calories? And the answer is it's because you lowered your calories. So that's a huge red flag when looking for a program. If you meet anybody who immediately says something is good and something is bad, we have to be very careful with that because I don't believe God put anything on this earth that is good or bad. It really just depends on the person. So,
Well, I'm sure there is some things that you could say, hey, that's not good for you, but I know you're meaning like, hey, if you're gonna have a, triple sundae, just tons of sugar, maybe some fried Oreos, because you went to like a fair, but it's just once every year, or once every 6 months, like that's not gonna kill you, right?
no, it's not. It's not. And it really depends on the perspective too, right? Because there's weight loss perspective, which is what I think most of the population is looking for. They're looking at it from the perspective of, I just want to lose weight. How do I lose weight, Breno? And understanding that it's about your calories in, calories out. That is the number one thing, because that sundae is probably going to have 1500 calories, right? Where if you were to sit down and try to eat a whole food meal, like with, let's just say you have a carbohydrate, some form of protein, some kind of meat, and then you have like some, rice or lettuce on the side. If you try to eat 1500 calories of that, that's going to be very difficult because processed foods tend to contain a lot more calories. And I just like to touch upon that point again, going back to when this started in the 1970s, or I'm sorry, after World War II, the biggest enemy that the soldiers were fighting were hunger, right? So soldiers were out on a battlefield, or whether it was the rainforest or wherever, people ended up starving to death before they even got to the battle. And so what happened is the United States decided, hey, we got to find a way to make food that doesn't need refrigeration, and we need to find a way to get food out there to these troops, or we're going to lose this war. So you have billions of dollars that were pumped into creating what we now call processed foods, things that would last for years. It really helped with the war, but what ended up happening is there was an overinvestment in the making of these foods. So now we have, right, imagine you're a business owner and you have a warehouse that contains thousands or hundreds of thousands or billions of dollars in food that isn't going bad, that you just don't know what to do with. This is when we start seeing the commercials for processed food. This is when we start seeing the foods going into the supermarkets. We see them going into basically the supermarket we see today is 90% processed foods, 10% whole foods. And so that's when they started introducing sugar into the population. And that's coincidentally also when we see a lot of correlations in weight gain, see a lot of correlations in diabetes, in high cholesterol, heart attacks, cancer increased dramatically. And so, just to kind of set the foundation for how we should think about food as a society, via the last 40, 50 years, is it's not your fault that all these foods are being introduced to you, but it is your responsibility. And I do think we owe the next generation, we need to come up with programs that educate people on these things. Because I think the person who maybe that person is a healthy person mentally, right? Like maybe they are in a place where they think correctly, they don't make any crazy decisions, but over the years, over the last 10 years, they found that they've gained 20, 30 pounds. And what can often happen is because we associate how we look, we're a society that's very driven by how we look. We can start to look at ourselves inwardly and condemn ourselves because we don't have that education. And so Going back to that program that you see on Instagram or something like that that says this is bad, it's like, no, we got to be careful with that because it puts a lot of people in this fearful state where it's like every time they drink a soda, every time they eat something that has sugar, they go, oh, yeah, I'm so bad. And then you repeat that pattern over the course of 50 years, 30 years, 20 years. And then now, before you know it, you're creating this identity for yourself that maybe you just never really understood why you gained weight. So understanding, I would say if there's two points to focus on when it comes to food in terms of the mentality is get more protein in, start intentionally focusing on getting more protein in, and then make sure that you're not over consuming in calories. So
That's good. So,
I just
for
think
the
it's I think that's very important,
from a
because
food standpoint, the takeaways that you can get is the quality of the calories, but just if you want to lose weight, eat less calories than your body burns, and eat more
you're gonna
protein.
lose weight. Yeah, and like I the audience here is important, but I want to say the majority of people eat less processed foods and focus more on eating whole, nutrient dense foods. Simply doing that is already going to make a tremendous difference, and you'll find that your cravings will decrease dramatically. You'll find that you won't want the sugary foods because you're going to be full.
Right. Kind of anticipate that you're gonna get hungry, right? Your blood, like, at midnight is oftentimes when people go and end up having that sugary snack or whatever because their blood sugar is lower. So if you're like, hey, I don't want to have that, maybe eat a little bit later, have a more plentiful food. Just to make sure that you're not doing that. So take steps. But I want to go back to something you just mentioned, which I think is really important, and it's that part about how people can start to change their identity and say bad things to themselves, right? About like, hey, well, I keep doing this, and or I'm never going to change, or I messed up again, and then it kind of can create that negative mindset about themselves. And going back to why people oftentimes make decisions to change is fear-based, right? It's like, oh, I'm gonna die, or I'm not gonna be able to spend time with my kids, or I'm not gonna be able to do the things that I want to do. But wouldn't it be much better if we did things from a place of love, right? And I know something that you express that is really important now that you're learning more about and working on, which is self-love and understanding that if we do love ourselves, we're going to take care of better care of ourselves, right? And you could justify, hey, well, I'm gonna eat this candy because I love
Yeah,
myself,
because I love
right?
myself.
But
I
then it's
deserve
more,
this, right?
right? It's more that discipline of knowing, no, well, yeah, there's a time and place for that, but I'm not gonna eat this candy because I want to be healthy because I love myself, right? And as Christians, we know that one of the greatest gifts that we have now is that we have the Holy Spirit. And the Bible tells us that our bodies are temples, which is beautiful. We carry God, the Spirit of God with us. So it says, take care of your bodies, right? So I think it even increases the responsibility to say, hey, we should be, when you talked about being an example or, for the next generation, is we should be the ones that are taking responsibility and ownership to take care of our bodies and be good representatives and stewards of what God has given us. I know the Seventh-day Adventist Church, which is focused on health as well and taking care of your body. A study found that there are some of the happiest people groups on earth, which is really interesting, right?
There's a
My
very
grandma's a Seventh-day
interesting thing about
Adventist.
that too.
Yeah. And I mean, like, she's super happy. It was funny because she went to visit my oldest brother and he was like, do you know who's the happiest person? I was like, grandma. And he's like, yeah. He's like, she has everything. Like, in her mind, she really doesn't lack anything. And I mean, that's beautiful. And she's been in Seventh-day Adventist for like, I don't know, 20 years or more. And I know that they put emphasis on preparing themselves for the
Well,
coming of Christ and, you know, things that are going to come in the future. So it's kind of interesting that they have more disciplines than the average Christian or person, yet they're happier. And there has to be some kind of correlation there.
there's blue zones and red zones, and I think maybe some of us are familiar with the terms, and I would need to dig a little deeper to get more specific. But in short, the blue zones are the places in the world where people consistently live longer. And I think there's like seven zones in the world where people live almost like close to 100. And one of the places, it's in California, I believe, is a place where there's the Seventh-day Adventist Church is very involved in the community, and they host, they host like classes and, movement activities, and the people there live longer. And then there's this highway that separates, where this county is to where another one is. And the difference in lifespan goes, I mean, I don't know exactly what it is, but it's like something like 20 years. So going back to your point, it is what we put into our bodies that determines a lot about how we feel, about our quality of life. So you can imagine, right? Like there's a highway that's literally 30 yards away that separates these two communities, and one community lives 20 years longer on average. I mean, it's an incredible statistic. So what that reinforces, what we should learn from that is what you put into your body, how much you exercise, how much you move can play a tremendous role. And I want to bring it back to the beginning of this podcast when we talked about if people looked at the word time as equal to investment, because I think too many people, unfortunately, make the decision when they realize their time is almost up, when they realize that their body is starting to fail and they're having a hard time moving. So then they go and, they work out and people start to exercise and realize how important it is. But the emphasis should be is if I put in 1 to 2% of the time that I have throughout the week into exercise, my quality of life is going to be better. Right. And then not only that, but I'm increasing my lifespan dramatically. And so it's just really having that perspective, from a large, from a 10,000 foot in the air picture. That's going to help us as a society to go back to why it's important to exercise and why it's important to eat well. I think for most people, though, in the day-to-day struggle, it's not top of mind. It's not something that comes to their mind. They're focused on paying bills, they're focused on doing a bunch of other things. But it doesn't have to be complicated. Focus on getting more protein in. Make sure you're drinking enough water and eat like an adult. Right? Like you're an adult. Put food into your body that's going to nourish it. And then again, like this depends on the type of person you are, but what motivates me is how can I help influence the people around me to the best of my ability? How can I help this next generation? And there's a lot of emphasis on more knowledge, more information, but there's not enough emphasis, I think, on the dinner plate. And as much as we tell our kids, as much as we tell the future generation to eat well, they have to learn it from somebody. And they're not going to learn it out in the world. They're going to need to learn from home. So it's a, I don't love going into that too much because I think it can be a little bit harsh and it can be kind of put you down a little bit, put you in a place of like, oh man, and kind of have a little bit of shame. But I urge you that it's not from a place of shame, it's more from a place of love and genuinely caring for the next generation. So, and I think when you, when going back to the Holy, right, the Holy Spirit and the temple that we have, honoring how we love other people, the Bible says that we need to love other people the way we love ourselves. We cannot pour from an empty cup, so we can't love other people, even though we may have the best intentions. We can't love other people without loving ourselves first, because whatever measure of love that I have for myself, I'm going to give to somebody else. So that's also another thing that if you are a group mentality kind of, humanity perspective, can really help you understand why it's important for you to do this. Because that's how I am. When I think of helping somebody, I'm more likely to do it. It kind of goes back to accountability. It's now I'm being held accountable because the people around me are watching me. So I need to make sure that I do this to the best of my ability. But there's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah, I no, I think this was really good in terms of discussing just the topic of health and you sharing about your experience. And I know that this is more something that people probably here in the in America and Western world countries would relate to, or as you mentioned, it's really the last 70 years or so that we're having this issue where the problem is more of an overabundance of food, and gluttony has become a thing, right? But I think people now realize from this conversation that ultimately, big takeaway is you're gonna be happier if you're taking care of your body, right? And if you're doing it from a place of self-love, right? And not out of fear. I mean, if fear is what kind of gets you started, great. But ultimately, you want to come to a place where you're like, I want to live life and feel good about it, right? And it's oftentimes the hard things that make us better, right? It's getting out of that comfort zone, right? And going back to being creatures of habit, change is uncomfortable, right? But it was Einstein said, if you don't change anything, you're all you, and you expect different results, you're crazy, right? So if you want to have, if you want to see a difference in your life, you want to have a difference, you have to do something different. And ultimately, we are in a biological body, right? So you could have your mindset right, your spiritual life right, but if your body is not right, and you're not taking care of it properly, you're not going to feel right, or vice versa, right? If you have a lot of energy, you feel good, that's going to help your confidence. That's going to help you a lot to be that person that you want to be. So, have compassion, right? I think is a key
And
point, because it's not
I
going to
think
be a perfect journey, right?
like I think to your point too, just I kind of cap it off here with this, but what does your inner voice sound like? How do you speak to yourself? And I'm grateful that the world is becoming more aware of this, but if you're shaming yourself, if you're guilt tripping yourself, if you find that that inner critic is extremely obnoxious, doesn't give you any space to breathe, it's important that I think, because at the end of the day, this stems from self-love. Right. If you were to completely love, for example, if you had a child who was doing something wrong and you loved him, your first reaction isn't going to be to bash him and to beat him up. It's going to be to him to explain, to educate, to find different ways of helping him, not scream at him. And I think a lot of the people out there
Good.
suffering with weight loss, or more specifically, fat loss, their inner critic is only contributing to the eating. It's only contributing to the anxiety. So talk to yourself from a place of love. When you write down why it's important for you to lose weight, Do it from a place of, I love myself and this is why I should do this. I
And
love
it's a
myself
tool,
and this
right?
is why I want to do this. Not, you fat piece of crap. Oh my God, look, you're always eating this stuff. This is terrible. Oh my God, yeah, look at this food. It's so bad. Oh man, like, yeah, look, I just ate a bunch of sugar today. Ugh. Like, you're fat slob. Like, these are genuine things that go through people's minds.
Right, and
And
being self-reflective is a gift, right? Like God gave us the ability to be self-reflective, right, for a reason, but it's a tool. It's meant to be used for good and not the other way around, right? To bring yourself up, not to bring yourself down. And you know, if you're realizing, hey, I'm not doing this right, then you got to change your inner dialogue, right? And I know we talked about inner dialogue and its correlation to its identity. And if you start to identify yourself as, I'm a person that takes care of their bodies, and I'm a person that, you know, enjoys working out, even though it might come off as fake in the beginning, our brains can't really tell the difference about like between sarcasm or not, right? Like our subconscious, you're programming yourself to say, to actually start to believe and become that person that does enjoy working out, and that is that person that takes care of their body. Awesome. Well, I know it's been about 50 minutes or so. Any final thoughts, Breno, in terms of what you would like to share in terms of your experience and what you've learned?
The moment, no. I think we pretty much covered the most important aspects from a bigger picture perspective of when you want to lose weight, these are things you should focus on, protein, calories, and self-love. Do it from a loving place. And if you're doing it from a place of calling yourself names, most likely you're going to go back to the same old patterns. Or your body will be physically healthy, but you will be mentally and emotionally unstable. So, yeah. Follow
Find
me on
a pace.
Instagram, BP Fit Training. That's
Yeah.
B and then P Fit Training. And on Facebook, my name is Breno Pisana. Maybe we could put a little, just
How do you
put
spell out
my name at the
Pisana?
bottom.
Right, I was
It's
appreciate you bringing that up.
PESSANHA.
Yeah. Okay. So y'all got that. If you want to look up Breno on Instagram, and you're putting content out there, and I know that you really are committed to your craft, and that's something that you really enjoy, and the reason you've been doing it for a long time now. And I appreciate you coming on and sharing about all of this with the audience. And I know this is something that's going to serve everybody. So let's actually put into practice and find something that we can improve immediately, right? And write down, your why. Why is it important for you? And really connect to that, and we'll be better off because of it. Awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely.